KSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein, a legal scholar. And watching the troubles of the Supreme Court in Israel, we turn to watching the troubles of Stanford Law School. Richard is an esteemed member of the Hoover Institution on the campus of Stanford University, which is a much admired school of higher education, very high education. Stanford Law School these last days has been troubled by an event, some of which is in video, some of which is in protest going on all the time, turning on the appearance of a federal judge from the Fifth Circuit, I believe, and protests by Stanford Law students that were not meant to be dissent, were meant to be disruption to the point of the judge not being able to speak to an invited event. Professor, again, I think the link with the Israeli story is that this is politics masquerading as legal scholarship. Do you agree?
I don't think there's any pretense that it's legal scholarship. It is, in fact, an intensely political movement, which has a very strong view of the way in which the world ought to be organized. And their own view is that they are protected in two ways. One, they can say anything they want about anybody else, no matter how abusive it turns out to be, because when you know you have the truth on the substantive issues, you're allowed to use all means to defend it. And on the other hand, what you're entitled to do is to have a hypersensitivity so that the moment somebody says something that offends anything that you believe, that becomes the cause or justification for you for launching this all-out war. And so this particular judge had taken some fairly strong positions on the question as to how malleable pronouns turn out to be. Can a woman decide to call herself they and force everybody else in speech to follow? And he said, no, I happen to agree with him on the substance. I think people have generally broad rights to choose their own names, but that pronouns, in order to work in a language, have to be uniform and accepted by everybody. And the moment you have people who demand that they have special pronouns, it's basically messing up the way in which everybody else thinks and makes it impossible for them to do their own intellectual or business kind of work. And so I think it ought to be stoutly resisted. The Stanford students think that this is just heresy, that identity politics goes to pronouns as well as to names and beliefs. And so what they do is they come into the room and they basically mow-mow the fellow when he starts to speak about an unrelated topic. This was by design. Stanford has a squad of deeds who deal with diversity, equity, and inclusion, a very dangerous movement. And so the key element that to understand about the Stanford dynamic is it has a paper commitment to freedom of speech, but it's enforced by the same deans who are doing all the work on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so what happens is the free speech principles are always submerged in practice to the other side of this thing. And the Dean Steinbach, who started to speak at that occasion, was a classic illustration of somebody who did not simply do the speech part of her job by telling the students to shush. What she did is she took the extraordinary steps to berate the judge for coming there. She says, how can somebody like you justify delivering a message on an unrelated topic when you've inflicted such harm on our student body? And she treats the student body as a bunch of fair flowers, such that the first bit of wind will blow the petals off and make them forever disappear. At the same time, these kids are such hardened veterans of this stuff that it's almost ludicrous to describe them as having these exquisite forms of passive sensibility. Well, I mean, the thing became public. The dean, who's not a strong dean, and the president, who's not a strong president, issued a kind of guarded apology, which I did not think went far enough. And the students, again, got even angrier. And so what they said is, our speech is counter speech, and you betrayed us. And so they dressed in black and they started to pick at the dean outside her constitutional law class. And so the thing continues to escalate. This is a bit of inexcusable self-indulgence by people who don't understand that the first principle of freedom of speech, which they purport to honor, is that you cannot stop somebody else's speech by simply taking offense at what they say. You can stop defamation, false words about you to the rest of the world that will deter your business and social opportunities. You certainly can protest the use of speech to coerce people by saying your money or your life or something of that sort. But if I happen to say something about pronouns and you happen to dislike it, your only remedy is to speak in your own forum in order to state the opposite position. These people use the definition of harm only to themselves that's so expansive that it obliterates any notion of freedom of speech whatsoever. So there's a kind of a conceptual confusion that underlies their particular position, because one of the things about these kids is they have such commitments to their own ideal that they cannot understand how a set of neutral principles can bind them as the way in which it binds everybody else. And they have this fantastic degree of self-indulgence, so that the only real question you have is what sort of sanctions should be imposed upon them, not whether you could find anything to say that justifies this kind of outrageous behavior.
Richard, you have experience. We have a little more than a minute. You have experience on campuses today. Is this a uniform problem across the country or specific to these events, and I shouldn't be generalized? We have about
I think the answer is things like this will pop up all the time, but the frequency, at least at level, is going to be relatively low, 2 or 3 times a year, usually for some kind of crystallizing event. The disgraceful behavior at the Yale Law School when Justice Kavanaugh was up for the Supreme Court was another illustration of this kind of mindless behavior. But I don't think it's become uniform, and I certainly hope it does not. And my view is that if sufficient sanctions are imposed against these students in this particular case, it will become a cautionary tale, so that the Federal Society or other groups will not be constantly subjected to this kind of abuse by a series of intellectual know-nothings.
As a member of the faculty, do you have authority here to, if this happens to your school, to go to the administrators and say this is very difficult to teach in this environment? We have 30 seconds.
I think everybody has that particular right to show into protest. The question that you're going to face is it may not even be a decanal decision as to how this is to handle, because the central university, through the president and the provost, may want to weigh in. So one of the things that makes it very difficult to deal with these questions is the complicated governance structure that you have. Makes it hard to get a uniform response without a lot of preliminary work. And unfortunately, in most universities, there are too many people have too much sympathies with the underlying ambitions of the protesters that they're all willing to overlook some of the dubious means that they engage.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, I'm John Beck.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.